Whitney Pittman on the Red River Farm Network in Washington, D.C. for Washington Watch with NAFB. We are talking with U.S. Grains Council Vice President Kerry Siffrath. Tell us a little bit about the Japan ethanol usage there. What's going on with that situation, and what are you excited about?
Sure. Japan just here in early April announced their new five-year energy policy, which includes expanding U.S. ethanol ability to have 100% of their imported ethanol use. Now, Japan imports ethanol in the form of ETBE, we're using ethanol instead of methanol to make that oxygenate product. It's actually produced here in the U.S. and exported to Japan. 4 years ago, U.S. ethanol couldn't have any part of that market share, and we've worked over the years to get to 40%, then 66% market share. Now we've worked with the Japanese government, and they've changed that to be allowing 100% of market share for U.S. ethanol. It doesn't guarantee us 100%, but allows us, before we were capped at 66% no matter what. And so at that 66%, we were at about 110 million gallons of U.S. ethanol exported in the form of ETBE to Japan. Now with 100%, that's about 200 to 210, maybe 220 million gallons market going to Japan. That's a big change for us going forward to have Japan, which was already a good market at that 110 million gallon, now being able to go to 210 or more, really makes Japan a big market for U.S. ethanol exports.
And what does that mean then for producers here in the U.S.? The export markets, that it all kind of comes back to the main goal of adding value to product here in the United States.
Yes, obviously, you know, ethanol producers are producing ethanol for domestic demand and love to see that continue to grow, and they have their issues with trying to get to year-round E15 and other things. But then, you know, as we can find markets for U.S. ethanol outside of the U.S. borders, we have about 2 billion gallons of ethanol production that still could be brought on. So we can expand, to help meet that export market in Japan. Canada to our north here is our number one customer. We're working with Canada, even province by province, as they continue to increase their blend mandates and the different provincial levels, and working very, very closely with the ethanol industry itself there in Canada. As the demand grows, most of that increasing demand is being met by imports from the U.S. And other markets around the European Union continues to grow as an export market for U.S. ethanol, the EU and the U.K. Trying to get some of those markets, the ethanol plants that have to be certified to be able to export, and so working to get more U.S. ethanol plants certified so they have that ability to market their ethanol to different markets around the world as well as just down the street from them.
And it's not just ethanol that you guys are concentrated on either. You've had some other successes, DDGs, those types of things. Dive into that a little bit.
Yeah, and on the DDGS market, our Southeast Asia office really seeing expanded markets in Vietnam, Indonesia, Thailand, Philippines. Our South Korea office really helping expand that market. But as we see ethanol markets, ethanol plants here in the U.S., some of them are adopting and starting to produce a different type of corn co-product, either a high protein DDGS or what some people refer to as a corn fermented protein, where they're pulling the fiber out and making like a second generation or a 1.5 generation ethanol from the corn fiber, giving us a little different ethanol co-product or a corn co-product out of those ethanol plants. And we're really working to help start to develop markets for those products around the world. We see the aquaculture industry being a big potential market, and we've already seen those products move into those Southeast Asia markets for ethanol, into Ecuador, into Turkey, other markets that are using it for aquacultural feed production. And we just recently put out a high protein, high corn co-product handbook out to kind of teach, because every product has a little differentiation from each other, and so teaching our international markets how to best use them, and so we put a handbook out to do that, as well as just working directly with some of the bigger importers, potential importers of those products around the world, of how best for them to use it, whether it's aquaculture, but there's uses for it in the poultry sector, in the swine sector, in the cattle sector as well.
And anything else that you want to touch on before we let you go?
I will add, you know, that we talked a little bit here earlier today, the Central American markets, the Guatemala, Honduras, we can throw in Costa Rica and Panama into that, Nicaragua, even the Dominican Republic, so the whole CAFTA DR. Each one of those markets isn't necessarily super big, but when I add them all up together, they're a 4 to 5 million metric ton corn export market, as well as a good DDGS export market. And so we've seen them, they've kind of bounced back, had some, you know, their economy slowed down with COVID, a little bit of the strength of the dollar, and that's all now, they're bouncing back from that and really seeing U.S. corn exports into those Central American markets continue to grow here recently.
And I'm sure you guys are keeping a really close eye on the GMO corn situation in Mexico as well.
Yes, very much so. You know, the new decree that President AMLO announced back on February 13th that is now changed, so it's targeting specifically GM events in white corn imports for human consumption. He's at least allowing yellow corn for feed and livestock use, yellow corn for sweet starch and sweeteners use to continue. But, you know, USTR has taken up consultations under the SPS chapter of USMCA. We'll see how they've continued to move forward on that direction. But, yeah, they've done no and produced no risk assessment, no scientific, reasons for banning these events in white corn, but allowing them for yellow corn for other uses. And so we'll continue to stay on top of that and work with our colleagues at USDR to continue seeing that issue move forward.
All right. Well, thank you so much for taking the time here. Carrie Sifereth, U.S. Grains Council Vice President, joining us on the Red River Farm Network. Reporting from Washington, D.C., I'm Whitney Pittman.